owing to the standing of the work discussed, Podcast Guys is without spoilers this week.
Good morning, faithful propagandist.
Hey, Fortunate Seeker.
This is Podcast Guys Talking, Alexander Wales.
Podcast Guys Talking, Alexander Wales is a whirlwind read-along of Shadows of the Limelight, where
a historian
and a world-renowned literature scholar
tackle the biggest questions ever conceived about the most superlative work of fiction of all time, such as,
are ships just full of organic curls?
What's the barber budget for the Zenith?
Okay, I'll bite. What is a Pneumafex?
Pneumafex? Hardly no effects. Stories have a logic to them, a way that they're shaped. I've traveled most of the world, and these shapes hold true. There's a new story, with you at the center, a story about a mortal man stepping into godly affairs. There's a new story here, and if you'll let me, I'll help you forge it. Wilexi Sunhawk.
Welcome back, everyone, to our third episode discussing the adventures of Little Nicky Lukes. This time, they just got to the Zenith, the ship that Wilexi apparently is riding around with his band of heroes, I guess. We'll get into it. They start dealing with his wounds, start dealing with Nick's whole great killing a guy, and then we get a nice little family drama.
Yeah, this is a great section. To be clear, sort of like we did last time, we've divided up a chapter into two episodes just so we can really dive in on things. But the section we're focusing on here is great because we get an introduction to a couple of pretty important characters, and we get to a little bit of information about one of them and even less information about the other. But it sort of establishes where we'll be going with these characters, which is great. Plus, of course, the Zenith, a centerpiece for the whole story.
I don't know. We're starting the second chapter now. We're not deep into it, but I'm curious, because you know that stories or fame, however that's measured, is directly correlated to people's power levels in the setting. Mm-hmm. And the Zenith has, we're told in the second sentence, she had 7 white sails that carried her all over the civilized world. Sure, I believe it, fine, great. But phrasing it like that, especially putting the adjective white in front of sails when this isn't describing seeing the ship yet. This is just describing the ship. Why is the color coming up? This seems like a stock phrase that stories would be told about. I'm interested to see if stories empower the ship like people are empowered, or if instead the ship has a story because it contributes to the myth of Wilexi and crew. And by crew, I mean Glass Girl and Flesh Lord.
Oh, I thought you were just leaving it at flesh. Glass Girl and flesh.
Should I leave it at flesh?
I think it's fine, too. I mean, he is flesh, so
Glass Girl and flesh.
There you go. I mean, they do have a crew as well, which we'll get into a bit. But yeah, I think having it, there's definitely a story, just like Wilexi's armor is storied and famous. It adds to the myth of the Sunhawk to have this fantastic ship, which is, you know, the fastest ship in the world. Apparently, it's got the 7 white sails. It's unbelievably well furnished, which is, you know, this comes up a lot, but it's interesting. This is one of the first places where it is explicitly mentioned. So this ship, the Zenith, has these thin silver sheets engraved with elaborate designs all over it, according to Luki here. And he goes on to mention Wilexi's armor and how the parts of the ship that aren't silver are carved. So, like I said, it comes up a lot, but the amount of money that must be spent to create this image is frankly staggering. It reminds me of, like, corporations in real life that spend so much money not on product or on advertisements, but on creating the image or the experience of interacting with whatever their product is, or the vibe that they're going for, to cement a specific vision into people's head when they think of that corporation or that company. And the Illustrati are clearly doing a similar thing here, where each individual thing may seem like a waste of money. Like, is Willexi noticeably stronger because he's got sheets of silver all over his ship? I don't know. But every detail on the Zenith changes the perception of the entire perception of the Zenith, and therefore of Willexi. It's just the idea of the amount of money that's being spent on make us look like heroes is just mind-boggling.
You know, I had liked Willexi so far. He seems like a pretty paladin-y hero so far, and you know that's my thing.
Oh, yeah.
But when you put it like that, and I start thinking of trash brands that are bad for bad people, like the fruit company that makes phones and computers, or the Twitter guy's cars.
Right.
Is Willexi the bad guy? He's an influencer.
Think of it this way. Sure, he's an influencer, I guess. But the difference is that this money he's spending directly affects his ability to fight against people like Xerstor, who, last I checked, sort of just kills people for his power rather than spending money. And while
he didn't even flood a city with blood,
that was his associate, yes.
Xerstor didn't do anything wrong. It was all Sanguine.
Again, guilt by association, I think, applies a little bit there, since Willexi couldn't stop the person flooding a city with blood because Xerstor was being aggressive.
That's really interesting.
Hmm? Yeah. Also, Xerstor just started killing people to convince Willexi to fight him last chapter, so.
Okay, that's fair. So maybe those people just shouldn't have been there. But with all the money they are pouring for the image, it makes you wonder how Illustrati-based the economies of this world are going to end up being. Because obviously these people go through a lot of funding if the ship is in use and also has no dense gouges or simple weathering, to quote from the text. Throwing that kind of money around, first of all, where do they get the money? Are they patronized? Are they profiting from bounties? Are they able to trade on their name alone and people just give them stuff? But secondly, that kind of money, which with all of our modern technology, keeping a wooden ship in that kind of order as it's used would be an enormous cash sink.
Mm-hmm.
Are these city level economies embodied in individuals? This feels like one of the big squads out there to me.
Yes, I was going to say that. I think most Illustrati are not riding around on the Zenith. And I think this might lend a bit of weight to the idea that the Zenith has its own myth attached to it. And, if the story of the Zenith is it's perfect no matter what, it does not show damage, it's clean all the time, then maybe that carries weight. I don't know. I don't know how much inanimate objects can benefit from the fame like the Illustrati, or maybe it's because it is Willexi's possession that it stays like that, perhaps, or tends towards that. I don't know.
Willexi's secret second domain, light and boat.
There also could be, if they have a contact whose domain is wood, that could it's a lot cheaper to fix wood if you control wood than it is to have to replace everything. Kind of Zenith of Theseus it.
3 out of 5.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, there's also this bit I mentioned earlier, how fast the Zenith is. According to Luki here, the Zenith is said to be the fastest ship in the world, able to outpace naval. I don't know what naval is, but let's try that again.
German for fog.
Ah, there it is. Able to outpace naval flagships and express packet boats alike. Anytime something is said to be in a story, in a work of fiction wherein there is weight given to stories and fame, you gotta think that there's a kernel of truth to it. But is the Zenith actually the fastest ship in the world? I don't know. Probably not. But it's said to be, and that's what matters here.
No, I think what matters is a woman who shows up after Nick is led down into the interior of the boat. And she's kind of the reason why I go with Nick rather than Dami, because I gotta say, this character, though.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we first hear about her is during the race where Luke's competitors are doing the classic, I'd let her cut me in half if I could just see her eyebrow, you know, that whole line. And it feels like...
I may quote myself from 2 episodes ago.
Uh-huh.
Mood.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, she's introduced here. And I don't know, would you like to read this? You tend to be the character getting introduced description guy.
Yeah, I'm going with it. A woman in glass armor stood over Walexi. She had blonde hair with a tint of red to it, which was pulled back in a simple braid. The armor was as clear as crystal, and a white blouse showed through beneath it. Glass was Vidra's domain, and where the armor would be suicidal on a normal person, on her, it was both an impeccable defense and a potentially lethal weapon. She was famed for taking 2 glass daggers into battle, 1 in each hand, but those were nowhere to be seen at the moment. She had a thick white scar on the side of her face, which passed through her brow and down her cheek, but it didn't mar her. If anything, it made her look more distinctive, more beautiful, and hinted at her dangerous nature. And if I may add myself, I just want to note, we learn they have a flesh magician on hand. This is so deliberate.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it. And also, scars are hot, and that's true.
So, it's been a while since I've read this particular story. I don't know why this is, but I would have sworn that Vidra had black hair. When I was reading it this again for this episode, and it mentioned her blonde hair, I was like, I was so convinced that I was questioning whether this had been a later edit after I read the story.
But why, though?
I have no idea.
So it would be a great prank to pull.
Maybe it was an elaborate prank by Alexander Wales on me specifically.
He does have that kind of adversarial relationship with you.
Yeah.
Did you at least remember her names correctly?
Well, a couple of them, I'm sure. But we get a list of her names, which are more titles than names. And she has a fair few here. Luke even mentions that she has as many as Walexi, and then lists a bunch of them for us. And they're all interesting. So the first one we get is the Queen of Glass, which I think is a great name for somebody whose domain is glass and who has sort of a nobility based vibe about her. So we go from the Queen of Glass to her second name, which is a large oof, I would say. It is the Whore of Abalon. So clearly there's a lot
like
going on.
Revelation?
Something like that, yeah. There's clearly a lot going on here, and there's some color added to that one with her next name, the Childish Bride. So we're already getting hints at who she might be or what has gone on in her past, and some of it's a little concerning, I would say. Next, we have the Princess of Blades, which is a bit of a mouthful, I would say, but, you know, good.
A mouthful of blades.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Shard Driver, also kind of hard to... doesn't really roll off the tongue, but not bad. Thorn Scraper, which I really like. And then the last one, which is just kind of a play on words. It's the Hand of Pain, but pain is P-A-N-E, because she does glass, and that's pretty good.
So, Queen of Glass, Princess of Blades, and Nick calls her the Lady Vidra.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I am ever capable of taking a hint.
Okay.
But I would be willing to suggest that perhaps there is a hint here that it's begging to be taken. And it only gets stronger when you see the extremely cultivated and carefully couched way she speaks. As Nick walks in, she glances at him, but she's talking to Walexi. And she asks him, I'm going to try to pronounce all the words here correctly. Are you going to die? And he says, no, I don't think so. And I think that's an interesting exchange. Apparently, whatever the details of illustratism are, he's capable of dying a slow death from his wounds. He's got that kind of mortality. And maybe he has a special awareness of his health, or there are special factors in place that he needs to be able to analyze because of whatever light does. I just think it's interesting. We'll see.
I don't know if he's got any special awareness. I think, I mean, the things he lists here as far as I don't think I'm going to die are, yeah, I lost more blood than I should have, which...
Which is to say any.
Yeah, honestly. His leg is broken. His arm is broken. His fingers are gone. Sorry, let's rephrase that. His leg is broken. His arm is broken. His fingers are off. Those are all bad things, but, you know, survivable, and especially given who is going to enter the scene shortly.
I could literally cut off my finger tonight and not die.
Yeah. Please don't do that in the studio. Like, go to a doctor and do it. Actually, that would be the best place. If you have to cut off your finger, do it in front of a doctor, because it'd be kind of funny. Hey, I've got to chop this off. Do you mind witnessing it? But he's he thinks that he needs those fingers so that they can be reattached. Mm-hmm. And... But he's not exactly sure if that's the play here. He gives Vidra two options. Either send someone to fetch them, or send someone to make a story out of them. And just the casual, go make a story about my fingers that got chopped off, is pretty good. Alexei is, you know, taking all of this in stride. He's very casual about the horrific wounds he's suffered. But that line right there is very funny to me.
Is that how they got all those relics back in the medieval churches?
They chopped off fingers and sent people to tell stories about them, yeah.
Yeah, you know, some priest in the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth just sent someone down to chop off John the Baptist's head again and bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I learn more about ecclesiastical history every chapter. Actually, is that a theme now? Let's see if we can keep that up.
Okay. But then we get... the third member of Alexei's little crew who shows up here.
Who I could have sworn had black hair, but it changed on me.
Okay, now listen. His hair I remembered. I don't know what point you're trying to make here.
A short man with red hair and a bright green apron came into the small cabin, which really wasn't suited for three people to stand around in, and clucked his tongue. He carried a leather bag filled with metal instruments, gauze, and small bottles, and I just realized that leather, we were talking about it earlier, oh, it matches up.
I mean, he is the Leather Man.
That is his name. He was a doctor by the name of Gail Motram. He had only the one name, Leather Man.
No, his... Man, it's too bad that isn't what's listed here, but his name listed here...
I should have been born a bard in this story.
Just call everybody Leatherman. Really confuse the issue. The name that Luke knows him by is Red Angel. Pretty, on its own, it definitely has some darker vibes. And then given what we read here shortly, it's got some pretty unsettling vibes.
But that's the best part. The vibes are pretty specifically unsettling. Because we're about to learn something about stories. Prepare yourselves. He had a dark history, though the stories were vague about what it was he had done. And when they weren't vague, they seemed too disturbing to believe. Experiments, they said. He was another living legend, a man who could kill with a touch. His domain was flesh. Okay, cool. But it sounds like, for the most part, what he's done is unknown, or likely in great part fantastical. But if he's in this crew, it means he's powerful. And that means it really is fame rather than being known. And I'm really hoping we get to a point where we discuss where the line is drawn. How far can a story diverge from the truth before it's not about someone anymore?
Interesting. It gut reaction is that it's more about not having... Huh. If a story gets told in such a way that it is so far from the truth that it doesn't really line up with what somebody's actually done, does it still benefit them if that's the story that spreads? That's an interesting thing to talk about. We'll have to pay attention to that and see what kind of evidence we can gather in the going forward with the story. That's interesting.
This is a pretty jokey sounding example, but I'm entirely serious. Would Shia LaBeouf gain power from actual Cannibal Shia LaBeouf, the song?
Wow.
Because that song is ostensibly about Shia LaBeouf. It's even presented as fact in so far as it says you're walking in the woods. Out of the corner of your eye, you see him, Shia LaBeouf. But it's an obvious untruth, and the character in actual Cannibal Shia LaBeouf isn't really, you know, Shia LaBeouf.
I think the important thing here is that actual Cannibal Shia LaBeouf, or to go back a few extra years, but for people more in our age group, perhaps, Chuck Norris memes, when that was a thing.
I hate that.
I don't think those work in the same way, because they are not telling a story about a person. They're not spreading the fame of a, well, they are spreading the fame, I guess. They're not telling a story about a person. They're telling a story about a character, and everybody is in on the idea that it is a fictionalized version. It is a character. And I think that probably sets it apart. It's not, it increases fame, but not fame in their real life abilities. You know, there's no kernel of truth to those in a way that connects to the person of Shia LaBeouf or the person of Chuck Norris, just in the character that we've all agreed exists kind of independently of their efforts.
I wonder if Alexander Wales knows about actual Cannibal Shia LaBeouf.
That's a good question. I wonder that as well.
But I also wonder, I don't wonder, but I also do have to point out, Nick notes that Gale can kill with a touch, which is obviously true. He's the Flesh Lord, Lord of the Flesh.
Mm-hmm.
But also, to most relevant extents, can't all of the great illustrati? Like, yeah, I suppose if you and she were naked, Vidra wouldn't be able to do much to you, because I think she needs glass, based on what she says at the end of this chapter that we're talking about next week. But she has glass on her. She will always have glass on her. And Willexi, I don't know, can't he just pop some light on you?
Yeah, but there's a difference between he's a living legend, he can stab me. That's true for anybody. The idea of not needing a weapon, of no matter what, a touch can kill you, no matter what. You know, you said she's never without glass. What if she is? He's never without flesh if he's touching you, you know? I think there's a level. Plus, there's just something more disconcerting. Being stabbed with something, even something as fantastical as ephemeral as light, is something we grok, something we just intuitively understand. That's a bad thing to have happen, and it will hurt you. But it's unsettling, it's alien, it's creepy that this guy can touch you and unflesh you, or whatever it is that he does.
Sorry, I'm just still caught up on he's never without flesh, which is... Oh, I'm sorry, you've caught me without my flesh.
Oh, I left my flesh in my other pants.
Oh, let's move on quickly, please.
Yeah, but that does bring me to, so his domain is flesh, which we've been talking about, but it's said here. And I have to say that the shape of these domains is very interesting to me. Why
the
is...
shape of flesh?
Yeah, well, the shape of flesh, exactly. Why is, just as an example that we've seen so far, light, or glass, a big enough concept to be a domain, when in my mind, glass is a much more limited and specific idea and item and concept than, say, flesh, or to take the extreme example here, light. These domains seem to encompass ideas, concepts that are very widely, wildly in their scope. Flesh is just like most living things that aren't plants, whereas glass is, well, you know, if you get your silica and you get it hard and it's this one material, and it's also manufactured and relatively rare compared to flesh, I have to imagine. I don't know, it's just the shape of these domains, the breadth of them is, it's interesting to me, and I'm really excited to see what other domains pop up and how we can compare their sizes and their breadth of applicability.
I look forward to that. And I hope there are some appendices at the end to help explain things.
Me too.
But Well, Lexi kind of introduces Nick. He says, Dominic DeLuca saved my life. He is to be given our full resources and a place on the ship. Not as crew, but as one of us. First, oh, cool. Well, Lexi really is clearly in charge. But secondly, this is just a really big thing to say of a total stranger who just did you a favor one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I phrased that deliberately diminutizing, but oh, yeah, you've done a kind of thing for me, and you are to have access to everything. And I'm sure that's not actually true. Like, I think either there are protocols or just understandings, but saying he is to be given our full resources and a place on the ship means, hey, let's include him in thinking through how things are being done, but we know, and he is a child. He is a child. We get to that later. He's like five or something.
Approximately, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, thank you, you saved me, now you are part of my family. But in a very practical way and not just a symbolic way, because he's getting our full resources and lives with us now. It definitely is a lot.
But it matters immensely in this world because, first of all, Nick killed Xanthor or whatever his name was.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Alexi just straight up says, we're elevating him. Huh. Just, they got a term for it and everything.
Yeah.
That makes sense, given the setting. Like,
right.
You can do that. If there were a person around that Joe Biden or the evil Twitter guy or, heck, Taylor Hussein Swift wanted us to know about, we would know about them.
Sure.
They have that power. I don't even follow their newses, but they have the power to make me just know about someone. It can be done.
And that, with making other people know about Luki here, is definitely, it's more than just, oh, he's going to be famous and he's going to have our money and a place to live. This is giving him personal power, fantastic personal power, based on, let's see here, he stabbed a guy once. Well, actually seems to be taking quite the gamble with our protagonist.
Especially since he's a hero, not a villain. And I don't mean to sound anti-American. It's just a happy coincidence. But I don't think handing out a bunch of guns is the way to ensure that the world will be a better place, because now people are defended.
Wow, what a bold stance. Good on you for being willing to take this stance in today's culture.
I am a hero. Please spread the word so people know. And I gain power and Patreon patrons. So Vidra asks pretty immediately, does he have any standing? Which I guess is relevant to know where you're starting from, but who cares? You're elevating him.
She's definitely very blunt with it, and just, I think it's probably more so she knows where she's starting. But this is cool too, because like you mentioned, elevating, we've got standing, you know, we've heard about domains here. We're getting a bunch of this jargon, I guess. Not jargon in the sense that it's impenetrable to us, the lay people, but there are specific terms for specific things within the field of the Illustrati. And I like it. I like that they have these terms. I just enjoy this language, that they have very clear standing. It's, you know, how famous is he? Elevating. We're taking him from being a guy to a guy with magic. You know, I just enjoy the language that's at play here.
I say a guy with magic, but the kind of magic actually does matter. We get the answer to your question from last episode. Vidra asks, does he have a useful domain? Because Zafgar, with his rust, was apparently hampered.
Mm-hmm. The implication here and there as well, but that there's a spectrum of power inherent to the domains themselves. That rust is a not great domain, but, you know, Z-Man made it work, and it's not the only one that's bad, maybe, or the only one that's on that end of the spectrum, since she doesn't specifically ask, does he have rust or dirt? You know, she doesn't say, like, here are the two bad domains or whatever. There's clearly a range of them, because she's asking if he has a good one. Unclear exactly what makes the cut for being useful, or how many there are that she'd be pleased with, or where that range is, but, you know, need to have a little confirmation on that from somebody who knows what they're talking about. And Alexi does not know the answer to this yet. because again, all he knows about our protagonist is this is the kid that stabbed a guy for me. But Luki reveals that it is indeed Shadow, and Wilexi really appreciates that.
Shadow and Light, a story for the ages, because it all comes back to the story. And then I read it again, and I realized, oh, that's why it's called Shadows of the Limelight. I get it now, because he's a shadow boy, and it's about the limelight.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew that the whole time.
Now we understand the title. That's good. Do we need to talk about this specific chapter's title as well? Is that one, was that, like, were the specifics of that one lost on you as well?
I mean, I assume they're going to meet some royalty in the second half of it.
All right.
But this is all, as you can tell by looking at how long the podcast has been so far, taken about a minute or two. They chatted a very little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken that long for Gale to finish this entire analysis. He says, you've lost a lot of blood. The flesh is all healed, but I count 10 broken bones, maybe 11, and he's low on blood. He won't get any rest unless I put him out. He can't help but push himself. And there's okay, you're putting him out? There's some trust there. I mean, I've been put out before. I'm really good at being an anesthetic because I have weird blood, medical condition. It's great. And there's trust involved there. Though in my case also, if I die, I like to die from going under too much anesthetic because then I won't even notice.
Yeah, that seems like the most chill way to die, I guess.
Let me put it on public record. Do not sue that anesthesiologist for malpractice. They already lost their job. They don't need anything else bad to happen to them. I'm fine with it. Shame, but I'm fine with it.
Well, this is going to be published, so I'm glad that you're fine with it. If something happens, we will point back to this episode of Podcast Guys Talking Alexander Wales.
You can leave this studio now, guest anesthesiologist who's here with a glass dagger to my throat. I said the line, few are safe. Get it, everyone?
Just a classic, one of our classic bits.
Vidra has a number of names that seem a little bit suggestive.
Uh-huh.
And she's a famous woman in a world that seems, unfortunately in this case, not terribly unlike our own, other than the fame thing and the technology level, which means trading on sexuality might be a really good way to famous yourself more.
Sure.
And she takes Nikki to her room and folds the seat down from the wall for him and sits cross-legged on her bed. And Nicholas is a teenager. And not to be crass, but I think that it's interesting that there's not a moment of consideration given to anything. I mean, they're already below deck, so nothing is above board, but you follow.
Sure, yeah. I mean,
I just think that's interesting.
He is probably in, to some extent, a state of shock right now, so that may contribute.
Okay, but maybe I'm confused because I am a homosexual,
okay,
but in see-through clothes, and I'm in her bedroom now.
She's not wearing see-through clothes.
See-through armor.
Yeah, with clothes underneath.
Which only gives a suggestion of them coming off then.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, I have to say,
I have to remember that everything a woman does in the way she dresses is specifically for the male gaze.
I really appreciate that of the two of us, our outspokenly gay host is the one who is very convinced that the woman in this situation is being sexual by existing. So, you know, thanks for that.
To be fair, the outspokenly gay host would like her to step on him.
Listen, that's true from all of the hosts.
But my point was serious and it's fully addressed. I just want to...
Yes. It is a good point, goofs aside.
And Vidra wants to get the story from Nick. And he starts talking, and the story, right away, really is such a story, even though we read the story earlier in the story when it happened in mm-hmm. the story. But now it's his story.
Sure.
And his story goes, I don't know how or where it started, but Wilexi came falling out of the sky, straight through the clouds, with his wings breaking into pieces behind him. He hit the statue of Jane at all. And this is true, as far as we are aware. This is the story imparted to us. But pardon the language, but gall darn it, that just reeks of story already. There's a lot of poetry here. And I'm wondering, even if Wilexi was wounded and maybe demi-conscious at best. How deliberate was this kind of fall? Did Zekrom or Walexi deliberately engineer running into the statue? Were the wings breaking into pieces like that just how it happened? Or did he deliberately exert control over the way he lost his magic at that point? How deep does the kayfabe go? And is this really a story just about professional wrestling? Yes.
I was going to say the same thing. That it's very much like, I don't know for sure that they specifically aimed for this statue consciously or anything like that. But when you fight for your career, I guess we'll call it, and you get better at fighting by interesting stories being told and circulating, I think the way you learn to fight is in such a way as to increase the engagement with that story. Did they line up the shot and make sure that the statue got hit? Maybe. Did one of them, likely Zapatista, sort of, I don't know, subconsciously hit Walexi towards a big imposing statue so that their showdown would take place in the shadow of the founder of the city? Yeah, probably.
It's really interesting how the nature of this world shapes everything.
Mm-hmm.
Including InfoSec and intelligence gathering. Because when Nick says Walexi turned into light, Vidra says he can't do that. Nick insists he did. Ask anyone who is there. And Vidra explains, within the next hour, half the city will be claiming that they were there. And the people who actually were there will be saying that they had a front row seat. That's why I'm talking to you now, so I can separate truth from fiction. Continue. They themselves have to work to parkour their way through the apparatus of storytelling. It's nifty.
Yeah, I mean, when you spend your entire life dealing and dwelling in story, you gotta have a way to get around it so that you can control the narrative, if nothing else. And also, you know, to an extent, she's probably concerned about her coworker and wants to know the details of how he got beat up real bad.
I feel like Walexi, we're only, I was going to say three chapters, I guess, since we're doing the half chapters, we're only a chapter and a half in. Mm-hmm. But he seems like the sort to come home bleeding out and missing some fingers all the time.
Yeah, that's fair.
And maybe even missing a weapon.
Yeah, in his recounting of events, we get this moment where Luki sort of very casually describes what happened. He says, "So I picked up Walexi's weapon from the ground, and you know, I picked up Walexi's weapon from the ground, and I killed Zarlon with it." It's a very casual brushing off of the fact that in the moment it was natural for him to, and even in retrospect, not noteworthy that he had picked up a spear made of light. He just sort of casually, yeah, so I picked up a beam of light and stabbed a guy with it. It seems like that would be interesting. Like, I would not have expected somebody else to have been able to pick up this beam of light off of the ground and use it, you know?
And that's not the only casual part of this, because I picked up Walexi's weapon from the ground, and I killed Zelda 2 The Adventure of Link with it. This child straight killed a guy. And while we get an increasing view of his criminal histories in this chapter, including next episode's second half of the chapter, I don't get the impression he's a killer. And I think that might say something about stories in this world, because there's a reason that in the military, there are sometimes racialized terms for the enemy, whether it just be even a simple name like Ivan, but they create characters in part because the idea of killing actual people is so abhorrent. And in a world of such extreme stories, are these just stories rather than people?
I think.
Or is Nick a bad person?
I think there's a couple things. I think, first of all, he's probably, like we mentioned just a moment ago, maybe in shock a bit. Second, if all of the stories of famous people that you know, or most of them even, revolve around violence in some way, and if those stories have an actual effect on the world, you may, growing up, just sort of assume that to be a hero or to be important, you have to kill, and that puts less personal weight on killing if the way magic works is that it encourages it. It could just be that killing Illustrati is a normal thing or a less bad thing than we would conceptualize a murder, you know?
May I take the bold stance of saying I am against murder?
You are really on a roll tonight, just really standing out there and speaking your truth. So they go back and forth a little bit about this, about what happened, and then Vidra offers Luki a position, I guess. She says, we have to get moving, we have to get set up, we got to talk to important people, we can't have Lexi showing weakness. And then she says, I'll have to inform the bards. Look, are you all right coming with us? We offer fame, fortune, and power. And she goes on for a little bit, offers a little bit more detail on that. But the important thing here is she offers fame, fortune, and power. And this entire thing, both in how Walexi, as you called attention to, says that we're going to elevate him, that he gets access to our resources, and how she's saying these are the things we offer you. It's so structured. It's almost formulaic. She offers these things. She can and does offer them. It's not, if you come with us, you have a chance at fame, fortune, and power. It's not come with us and strive for these. It's a guarantee. Come with us and you'll get these things. We know how the Illustrati work, and if you're with us, you will be one of them, and we will elevate you, to use the phrase that Walexi uses. It's just interesting how something as hard to grasp, hard to specify as fame, has such a specific ladder in this setting where, hey, come with us and you'll be famous, rich, and powerful, period.
Get in, Luther. We're going heroing.
Exactly.
Is Vidra the Regina George of the group?
She is. Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that's an intentional parallel that Alexander Wales was creating for us.
That's why his leather bag is so big. It's full of secrets of his dark and terrible past.
Well, hold on. So with what you just set up, will Lexi have ESPN?
It would explain how he knew how to hit the statue when he broke through the clouds.
There it is. It's all coming together now.
And that means Nick is Katie. He's the Lindsay Lohan of the group.
I believe it. I mean, coming back to this, I could have sworn that he had red hair.
Wait, if you're from the Savento States, why are you famous?
So Vidra starts to lay out the plans. She says we need to leave, and then sort of waits a moment, and Luki's just like, yeah, okay, let's go. And she's frustrated because he didn't ask where they're going. She explains that they're on some quest for a MacGuffin, basically. All we know is that it's called the Numifex, and it's Walexi's quest. And again, Luki just sort of takes that in stride and is not really sure what's going on. But, you know, little name drop of a MacGuffin that we might need to pay attention to going forward.
Vidra is so put out because he's not asking any of the questions she wants him to. And he just says, sorry, it's been a long day.
Oh, man.
And it really has. He's had a rough one. Also, the best one, but he deserves a nap. Okay, speaking of it being a rough one, what is his biggest problem right now?
I mean, he owes a lot of money to Korta.
And in the first chapter, we saw how that money was, you know, a big sum. Like, it was start a business money. It was get a home money, which are big things, don't get me wrong. But, like, he saved Walexi's life. If I saved the life of a big sports figure and they were deeply in my debt and were offering to just make me their apprentice and give me access to all their resources, I would simply not be afraid that I wouldn't be able to get a few hundo K to enable doing all the things they intend. And yet Nick worries that if he asked about his debt of 4,000 copy, that she would laugh and say he wasn't worth that to Walexi. If the quarterback of a football team owed me their life, I would simply ask for $500,000.
Hey,
also, they're overpaid. Also, that's not the problem with sports ball. The problem is the owners, the stadiums, and public paying for them. here's my stance for the day. People shouldn't play American football. It's bad for them, and they should have the right to.
Yeah, professional athletes are societally overpaid, and for their labor or for the value they produce, hugely underpaid.
They need to unionize.
They have one, usually. Hey, here's a fun question. You said if you save the life of a big, big famous sports person, just, you know, who are you thinking of? Who's the big famous sports person you think makes enough money that this would be worth it for you?
I was saying a quarterback, so Serena Williams.
Good choice. So
why?
Why is it a good choice? Because she's pretty cool.
Why do you ask?
I was just wondering. You're not a huge sports guy, so I was just curious where you were going to go with it. The section ends here, so the chapters are sort of divided up into a number of sections that are mostly scenes. So there's the scene on the ship, and the next scene is Luki leaving the ship. But this section ends with a couple of sentences here, right after that discussion on being concerned about asking for pocket change. We get Luki wanted her to note some falseness in his denial to extract the information so he would be able to lay things out for her. Vidra simply took him at his word, though, and that was that. And then the section ends. The section break follows that, and it's a very, I don't know, Walesian section break. Alexander Wales in all of his works just adores these abrupt, almost rushed ends to sections or chapters or things like that, where there's a conversation ongoing, and then over the course of a couple of lines, usually narration, just sort of wraps up the whole thing and ends it right there. And I really appreciate it. It's an art to ending things without letting them ramble. And I just like this. I enjoy Alexander Wales' works, and in this one in particular, to see this moment of, hey, he's always written like that. It's just nice. It feels good.
And then he's out and about, and it don't feel good no more because he don't know how to talk right good about fame and cultivate story good.
Wow, that was well put.
Thank you.
There's some people around, a lot of people, perhaps a crowd. And he's asked if it's true that he was involved with everything and that he killed Zentillion. And Luki's response is, I did. It was luck more than anything. And I have to imagine that Walexi and Vidra would be displeased with that answer, that it's not doing much to increase his standing to say, I got lucky. I'm not important. I was in the right place at the right time.
I would argue that it's not so much what he's saying that would be the problem as the lack of a plan behind it. If there were a story he was trying to build out of the kid who stumbled into it and got swept up, it'd be great if you're building for that. But without a plan, come on, what are you doing? Don't be in public. Get a publicist.
Simply do not be in public.
He only has one name at this point. He shouldn't be seen. He shouldn't even be known.
He has the one name, Light Scour, which is, you know, fine. Definitely needs to get some new ones, some better ones. But we're told that Walexi has 100 names, and then given we get a couple of them. So we've heard Sunhawk before, which is, I think, an excellent name for Walexi in particular, and also just generally. The other two names that are listed here are White Spear and Bright Shield. I'd say White Spear is a pretty solid name, but Bright Shield, I really like Bright Shield. I think that's just a very striking name. So they're all very color and light focused, which makes perfect sense given Walexi's whole thing. But I just enjoy when the names show up on here.
They are very good. And so Nick, he is surrounded by a crowd, and in two blocks, he's cleared all of them except for a young girl keeping pace with him. And I wanted to press X to doubt because he's the guy who did the thing, and this whole society is basically, this is Instagram world, right?
Sure.
Which means it's terrible. But you know what? Even though it's Instagram world, nobody knows who he looks like, so that's fine. He got away from them and knew people wouldn't latch on.
That's true. They saw him coming off of the zenith, and that's attracting a crowd. But once he's not with those people anymore, he's just a guy.
A guy.
You call this Instagram world. Would a better title than be Shadows of the Clout? Can we start just calling it that?
You're lucky I respect our audience more than anyone will respect you after you said that.
Wow.
So he's asked what he does for a living, and he answers that he was a runner for packages for the wealthy mostly. And we learn that means contraband. Drugs, sometimes. Malum, mostly. Hey, note, malum, that's interesting. That's Latin for apple, I think. Sometimes it was prescribed literature. So apparently doctors in this world give people literature to get better. I'm kidding, prescribed meaning banned.
Thank you.
And he looked into packages whenever there wasn't a seal on them, which is pretty bold, I must say. But then I learned what true boldness was, because in the next sentence, there'd been a time when he'd taken his own cut, but he stopped that when Santino had been caught doing the same and paid with his life. Oh, also, I like Corta more now.
For killing children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Punk kids who deserve it.
Because it turns out Luki is a child.
Yeah, the girl asks how old he is, and he replies, I'm 17. And I just gotta say, ew, grow up? Like, what's wrong with you?
He may be just a baby, but he isn't, he's not enjoying this conversation with this girl. She asks what he's trying to do, and we get that he contemplates running away from her, but before deciding that he had a little bit more dignity than that.
No, he doesn't.
I love the idea. The image of just being in a conversation that you find uncomfortable and are just done with, so you just turn and sprint away. Kind of strong.
I work with children, and I have to say, I kind of want to try just running away from them when I don't feel like dealing. Because I am faster than those children.
Well,
It's
yeah.
very important for me to note. I'm faster than them. I'm stronger. I'm taller. I'm older. I know more. I am better than they are.
Also, children probably wouldn't bat an eye at that because kids literally do that. You're talking to a kid and they decide, actually, I'm going to go play with my toys now, and are just gone.
Kids are the worst. They should learn to just shut up and obey like a shadow.
Is that what shadows do?
Well, that's what Segways do.
Oh, you're right. So this girl kind of latched herself on to Luki, and on a read, I think the vibe that one might get, or maybe not that, but what one might read between the lines here is that she is trying to attach herself to him romantically as a sort of like, ah, look at me, I'm with the famous guy. But it turns out that she is trying to attach herself in another way. Apparently, Illustrati have something called ombras, which, kind of following down the line here, ombra, Italian, it's shadow. And we get this description of somebody who is there for the Illustrati, who's an assistant. And it's just a neat thing that there's this understood second class of Illustrati, well, not Illustrati, but of people who are attached to Illustrati, who are using them to get famous while also being useful assistants to them. And it's just a neat dynamic that doesn't really go anywhere with this girl, but it's there. And I say it doesn't go anywhere because a couple paragraphs later, Luki informs us that he has absolutely no intention of ever seeing her again, let alone seeking her out. So, he's just lying to her when he says that she can wait for him.
He's such a hero.
Truly.
But I think the real hero is bread.
I mean, fair.
So apparently, Lil Nicky Nick comes from a bakery family.
Envy.
And he comes home, which is the right choice in this situation. And his mother greets him and asks, what are you doing here? To
Oof.
which he simply replies, it's complicated. Is dad around? And we don't know his full family dynamic right now. But knowing what he is, I just feel that if I were a mother to a cringe lord demi-crime street racer fail son, I would not want him to come home and say it's complicated, because that means the ankle breakers are on their way to break my knees.
There really is a sign of the times that the ankle breakers have to also break knees.
That's what I'm saying! And she goes to get him and tells him, hey, pick out a loaf to take home. gesturing at loaves of bread stacked up in baskets on the wall with olives, cheeses, and garlic baked into the top of most of them. And other than the fact that olives are disgusting, so good.
Yeah.
How did this trash lad go so wrong from such a perfect home life?
That is a good question. Also, I am a little annoyed that I don't have fresh baked bread with cheese and garlic at hand right now. We need to just have some of that around, I think.
It sounds like a joke, but because of the greater implications, I seriously do believe I would vote for any candidate who would promise, who could effectively promise, that she would see a bakery on every corner, or rather in every neighborhood.
Sure.
Because if we lived in a world like that, things would be better, and we'd need fewer cars, which are the devil.
I can get behind a baker. I can get behind a bakery on every neighborhood. On every neighborhood, in every neighborhood.
He comes from a large family, and he talks about where his siblings are or might be. And we note that Anna would be staying with whatever tutor his parents could convince to work for bread. And in addition to working with children in my day job, I also tutor with children in my night job. And I gotta say, I would work for bread. Let's get this bread, fam. I'm young and hip.
So true.
So, how many days did Nick have to travel to get home?
That's a good question. Let's double check this. And it seems like a handful of minutes. So.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So Daddy comes out. He wipes his hands on his apron. And then we're told he looked much older than Dominic remembered. He'd gone gray at the temples. And where he'd always been a thick man, now he had a bit of a pouch. He was sagging in more ways than one. Nicholas, your parents are in walking distance. What is wrong with you? Yes, clearly there are tensions, and I don't know whose fault it is or how bad it is on the surface, but you clearly are at the point of at least casual civility, if tense. Drop in and check in on them and take some bread home. It is worth it. Why don't you know what your father looks like?
I mean, I get it. If the tensions are such that he... If this is the best things have been in a while, then... Perhaps the distance was a necessary thing. Also, maybe his father rapidly grayed recently, and he just saw him a couple months ago or something. You don't know.
Oh, maybe someone with the domain of gray got to him.
Ah, you hate to see it.
Or the domain of age. Could that be one? That'd be a pretty cool one.
I feel like that one would be pretty busted.
Unlike rust?
Yeah, unlike rust. I think age is... potentially more powerful and wider reaching than rust.
So he tells his parents he killed a guy.
Uh-huh.
And that is not at all an issue. I just know that if I were to kill someone, my parents would not be pleased.
Same.
And that's even if I were to kill, I don't know, who do my parents despise? I just can't think of anyone my parents want me to kill. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But the tensions here are such that with this back and forth of, hey, I killed a guy, you know, a big guy, a big important guy, the response is you were gambling with your life, and if you're telling the truth, we'll get a surge of business at least. And then he says, his father says, we won't lie for you. And Lukey is a little confused. Lie for me? I won't make you out to be a hero. I won't pretend you're someone to look up to. And then the... kicker, the nail in the coffin of this conversation is, now if that's all, I have a cake to bake. He summarizes, hey, you know the most famous hero and the most famous villain around? I saved one of them and killed the other. With, if that's all, I need to go do a baked good now. So, in summary, yikes.
And then Lil Nicky, who just killed his settings Osama bin Laden, and... just announced that because of it, he's going to apprentice to, how about this reference, Wayne Gretzky, who is the best tennis player of all time?
Lacrosse.
Who is the best tennis lacrosser of all time?
Mm-hmm.
He's apprenticed to Wayne Gretzky. He balls up his fist like a Midwest theater kid, insisting they're going to go make it on Broadway, and says, Dad, I'm leaving the city. I'm going to be Alexi's protege. Don't you understand how important this is? How big of a thing it is? I'll be gone for years. And anyway, I think poorly of the child now.
I mean, you're right there with his dad, whose response was, so go then. We wish you the best.
Well, you know what? Well, Lexi's going to be his real dad then.
Wow, so true. But just like Lukey at the end of this section, we are also going to be leaving and will be gone for an amount of time, because that is all the time that we have for today.
Join us next week on Podcast Guys Talking Alexander Wales as we discuss
Tito,
Tino,
and Totino's pizza rolls.
Delicious.
Drown a city in their blood.
Podcast Guys Talking Alexander Wales is a fan-made podcast discussing Alexander Wales, Shadows of the Limelight. Check out the full serial at alexanderwales.com. Intro music for this episode was Leva Eternity by Lemon Music Studio. Music for the epigraph was Inspiring Stories by Coma Studio. Outro music, which even now is elevating my voice to the realms of the divine, is Call to Win 90 Seconds by Good B Music. The music is provided by the generous license of pixabay.com/music. Go and support all the artists who make this work possible by writing their stories and sounds free of charge. If you'd like to support this podcast, follow us on Twitter at @TheLongPrice. Questions, comments, contributions? Are you overwhelmed by the urge to correct our errors? Email us at thelongprice@gmail.com. If you'd like to materially support our work, but not this exact podcast, because if you didn't catch on, it's a joke, haha, we got you, find our Patreon at patreon.com/PGTEE. Join the ranks of our patrons and some other stuff for the practice guide crowd. We implore you, don't consider joining unless you're already supporting the artist who makes this all possible. Special thanks to our patron and villainous hero, Gray, our patron and liege, always claimant, never named, our patron and guardian, the Fae Knight, our patron and mentor, the traveling teacher, our patron and dear friend, Aaron, our patron and inspiration, the hopeful romantic, as well as the hordes of cattle below. Next week, Chapter 33, Cleanup.